was listening to you talking about missed connections.
Yes.
And there was totally a missed connection about when I was working at Barnes & Noble.
Nice.
Barnes & Noble is like one of the top... Barnes & Noble and Target are like the places
for
missed connections.
Did you know that that handicap and bathroom is a sexual rendezvous area for people?
Really?
On Craigslist? Mm-hmm.
Well, next time you're
I don't work there anymore.
Reading a book and you just happen to be lonely, stop on by the local Barnes & Noble.
Apparently it's like the rest stop of retail stores. I don't know. It's very weird.
Welcome to another episode of... Demot Majors.
What the
computer?
Fuck was that?
I have no idea. The computer's doing things.
How about you keep track and we don't need to know?
Oh, okay. Well,
It like we usually do, where you just fling things out and I go, oh, Jesus.
Yeah, that works too. We don't need a computer. We don't need a computer for this.
We are joined today with Meredith Tozer, who is back.
Oh, thank God. I thought Aaron, like, did some work and it did not turn out very well.
He changed from Bilbo.
Where are we on the Aaron watch 2014?
Well, he got his hand out of the shark.
Yeah.
He's no longer Jim Hensoning the shark.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
Then what keeps him from being here today?
While he was getting out of bed at the hospital, mm-hmm. he got his foot stuck in a bedpan.
Really?
So
this
now
seems like a pretty quick fix, though.
So now he... Well, no, because he was...
It's fitting, because it's a total art major move.
Yeah.
Using
it's
a
very
bedpan.
Duchamp.
Yeah. he's definitely... But the problem is, in his clunking around in the bedpan, trying to get the bedpan off, he inadvertently kicked it off of his foot, bouncing it off the ceiling, knocking himself unconscious, and he is currently laid up in the hospital waiting to recover from his concussion.
Aaron Watch, 2014.
So that is he was hit in the head with a bedpan.
Well, so with him being out of commission, we invited Meredith for her third episode.
Pretty much unofficial damn art major.
That's
actually
official.
Well, no,
actually.
I mean, you're officially a damn art history major.
Yes, yes. It's in parens. So,
yep.
Damn art history.
Well,
I don't know why I keep doing my hands like this. No,
because all the listeners can see that Meredith is currently making things that kind of look like
she's massaging a watermelon?
Yes. Yes. That is exactly...
Is that how you do parentheses?
Or framing yeah. a circle in the sky? But yes, that's
Sorry.
What for all the listeners out there.
That was
there,
intense.
Judgment.
We
weren't
camping.
We'll take a photo.
We'll take a photo so everybody knows what that motion was. Yeah, exactly. Anyway, so we have a new thing going on today.
We do. This actually came to me.
This came to you
this
without you running it by anyone.
I did not run this by anyone. I was like, I'm sitting at work, and I'm like, I really enjoy the beer part of our show.
As
we need,
do many listeners.
We need to get the listeners involved with the beer part.
Sure.
So I was like, you know what? Screw running this by anyone else. I'm just going to throw this thing up on Facebook and be like, people, what are your favorite beers? And guess what? The people responded. We actually got more responses than I expected.
Yeah.
And we have so many responses, we're probably going to have to continue this from episode to episode. And then maybe at the end of the year, we'll have, like, the winners from each episode. We'll compete again.
Whoa.
We will straight bracket system this bitch.
It's quite the commitment here.
Maybe they'll get a signed picture of
So let's explain to the audience, the listenership, the what you drinking contest. As Dutter stated, we had listeners write in their favorite beers for us to sample for what you drinking. We've selected three lists
because
of beers
there's three of us here.
There's three of us here. And we are going to all three sample the beers periodically throughout the show. We will then rate them on a 1 to 10 scale. We have little pieces of paper and we'll jot down just like judges. And at the end of the episode, we will...
Do some math,
and then we'll get the winner.
Then we'll get a calculator to do some real math.
Right. And then we'll announce the winner, and the winner receives a sticker prize package, which is pretty neat. So
you're going to get a piece of duct tape, a piece of masking tape, and a Sharpie, and you can write Damn Art Majors on the piece of masking tape, and then use the duct tape to hold the piece of masking tape wherever you want to put it.
There you go.
No, I'm joking. You'll actually get two stickers. One from Oak City Hustle and one from us, Damn Art Majors.
There you
podcast.
Go. Yeah. And you didn't even really have to do anything. So it was pretty cool.
You had to tell us what your favorite beer was. And continue writing them in. We will continue selecting three from the list of write-ins we get. And that way we are constantly mixing up the type of beer that we are drinking on the show. And including you, the listener. Because you're important. You matter.
So let's go down the contestants here. From Facebook, submitted by Isaac, we have Founders Curmudgeon Old Ale. Next, from Twitter,
in the blue corner,
at Team Holtz, we have 21st Amendment Bitter American. And finally, from Facebook, we have Rob, who submitted New Belgium's 1550.
Black Lager.
Meredith, what do you think of our contenders today? It's a nice, don't you think it's a nice mixture, a nice field?
Yes. Well, so this made me feel really a lot better about coming on the show because the beer part always makes me nervous because I'm not cool enough to know anything about beer. So I go and have strange people at the beer store pick things out for me.
Nice.
I felt the pressure was off. So yes, I'm happy to participate in this, and they look like a good variety of different types.
Well, I've always wanted to try Bitter American if for anything.
There's a monkey on
the illustration of the space monkey.
Yeah, it has a monkey on the can.
That's right.
And listeners, go out, buy these beers, drink along with us.
Yeah, there's.
But remember, don't drink and drive. Drink responsibly.
Right on.
Dare. Right. I don't know. Other slogans about being safe.
Maybe. All right, everybody grab your one beer and grab your glass, and let's start this.
We're
going to do separate ones?
I'm going to start off by sampling the curmudgeon.
Right, I have the 1554.
I got Bitter American.
And I'll be sure to leave enough for everyone else to sample this one when, yeah.
All right.
Trying to do some math here.
So,
ratios.
There you go.
It has a lovely fragrance. And,
Ooh,
so,
that's nice.
Do we have any news?
Oh, yeah. Do we have any updates? Anybody, I heard you were... starting the playground?
I have begun working on a sculpture through work that there will be some giant reveal at some point later in September.
Yeah.
Probably when it's all done. But that's happening.
Is this piece interactive or is it...
It is interactive. It will actually have a pentatonic scale bell system on the inside.
Ooh.
So you will
I don't
be
know
able...
what that means.
It's basically, it's a 5-note scale.
Oh, okay.
It's what, I believe it's what a lot of Asian instruments use.
Gotcha.
It allows them to create a melody. From the little bit of music I know, which is next to nothing, is that it is the easiest scale in which to create melodies that sound good. Whereas with an octave, you've got so many different options, it can, you know, things can sound bad. And then with only three notes, which I don't know, a triptych scale, I don't know what they think. Anyway. But.
Very cool.
Yeah.
And I got my stuff still hanging up at the Zappal Gallery in Asheville. It's up. It's getting some attention, which is nice. If you're in the Asheville area, please stop by the Zappal Gallery and check out over 50... artists who all do a range from pop art to comic art to just really cool stuff you can't find anywhere else.
I just realized this Founders that I'm drinking is 9.8%.
Well, you're not drinking very much.
Well, no, I'm not drinking very much of it. But I'm also drinking a beer on the side as my palate cleanser.
This
so.
Day drinking thing is dangerous.
We might have to
hang out for a while.
What'll be more dangerous is our listeners who tune into us like first thing on a Monday morning, and if they're drinking along with us.
Well, this is actually going to be a Tuesday episode.
Get you through the
office. Oh, so there you go. Even better.
Unless you want me to edit this while, you know, slightly inebriated.
It doesn't matter to me.
Doesn't bother you?
No. I self-censor.
Speaking of censorship, have you heard the latest from London's art school going on? Some controversy brewing across the pond.
Yes, I did hear this. I think it is a student with a stick up their butt.
Yeah.
Well, according to the Huffington Post,
University of Arts London has been forced to defend itself following allegations from a student that she failed her undergraduate ceramics degree because the unsavory nature of the art she produced, a series of ceramic feces, would have hindered the university from attracting prospective students. I quote that from an article that was originally appeared on ArtNet News that is now appearing on Huffington Post. And
in their art and culture
section. We will put a link up so that way I'm not plagiarizing. Or they're calling her Anne Plum.
Anne.
It was Mrs. Plum.
It was.
In the art school.
It was Mrs. Plum. In the art school with the feces.
So Anne here did a lovely job recreating some of our favorite bowels movements. For ceramics class.
You gotta be careful where you put that comma in there. Right. Some of our favorite bowels. The colon.
So, how do we feel
the
about this, guys?
The small intestine.
The large intestine. No. Bowel movements.
The University of Art here, they don't really care for Miss Plum's work.
I mean, okay, so I didn't study art in terms of actually creating it.
Sure.
So, contemporary art, like, you have a lot of shock value stuff that comes up.
Right.
Is this really all that shocking? I mean, it's not like she's coming up with any new statements that haven't been said before or said better than the way she
right.
said it.
Yeah, I read the article, and from what I gathered, the School of Art has nothing wrong with her doing these works. The problem she has is she got a failing grade. So I think she's saying, she's basically bitching and moaning about the fact that she failed because her art wasn't up to snuff, so she's making an excuse.
The
excuse
that.
Being that...
She's not good at bullshitting her way, no pun intended,
yeah.
through making... I mean, you could have some famous artist present the same piece and it would get a bunch of... press, you know,
yeah.
but she obviously didn't have a good enough story behind what it means in order to convince everyone in her class to give her good props, right? I mean, I don't know how
right.
that works, but the one drawing class I was forced to take as an art history major, we had to do critiques, and part of your grade came from that, so I don't know. I see it more as she's not very good at telling her story as
yeah,
much as...
Well, see, and when it comes to grading art, I always feel like a good portion of that needs to come back to craft and execution of the project, because concept and philosophy and psychology can be made to enhance art, but it really comes down to brass tacks when it comes to a grading scale, and that should be solely based on, you know, execution and craft. Her shit don't look like shit. I mean, simply
yeah.
put, it doesn't look... I mean, I used to work at Spencer Gifts, and we sold fake dog poop that looked more realistic than what she's putting on display. So clearly, her work isn't actually showcasing the skills she learned while in class, the art form itself. It's not highlighting the department in a positive light, nor is it highlighting herself as an artist in a positive light.
Well, I mean... Honestly, I don't think the department cares, because, I mean, from when I was in school, there were tons of people that made pieces of artwork that commented on the space that they were working in. I mean, and that's one of the great things about art, is it, in many cases, can be very self-deprecating, and that works just fine, and a lot of artists and art communities and galleries are very accepting of that. In fact, the best is when artists will showcase artwork that purposely puts down the art world. But it's being shown in an art gallery. So there's a very... I mean, artists are all about doing stuff like
that.
Well,
like we were just talking about Duchamp in relation to Adam's...
Yeah.
Aaron's injury. You did not injure yourself.
No.
So, I mean, obviously that's a technique that's been around for a really long time. That was early 20th century that Duchamp was doing those kinds of things. So this isn't anything... If that was her purpose, I feel like...
I feel like I need more information.
Right.
I want to read her artist statement. They only have one picture, and it's actually...
It looks like cookies and cream.
Well, it's well, no, the problem is the glaze. She's got a high-gloss glaze on this thing, so it's, like, reflecting a lot of light, and it's a really bad photograph. But it looks like it's supposed to be, like, poop on a plate, and it just says, assess me, or ass me, or assay, sss me. Anyway, the spacing's a little odd. But I just... I need to see more. Like, to really, truly critique this or understand where...
And what was the assignment?
Like what is... Well, from what I gathered is, this is like her thesis. This is like her graduate student thesis work or something. So, like, this is the culmination of her experience as a student. And I'm not getting enough from the article.
I mean, it seems more like a big middle finger to the entire art school that she was going to, like, this is my final project, fuck y'all, because I'm right. You know, I mean, this doesn't even look like it. I don't know enough about ceramics because I've never done them, but it doesn't look like it would really require that much time and effort put into it,
right?
So is this kind of, I think this assignment is bullshit and here's my assignment, obviously, you know? I mean,
there's a better way to go about displaying ceramic poop, and this isn't it. I have thought about this. How I would do a show. Hey, if I came up with a show for how to display Andy Warhol's secret, like, hidden computer stuff, right. I just came up with a way to display ceramic poop. And what you do is you take a gallery, you line the gallery with, like, toilets that you get from scrap yards, from, you know, just toilets. Just different types of toilets, different models of toilets, different eras of toilet, like, toilets. Just tons of toilets that you didn't even make. You just acquired these toilets. And then what you do is you finally craft in ceramic fecal matter. Like,
in different kinds.
Different kinds. You've got the rabbit poop. You've got the I ate too many burritos poop. You've got the solid, the most gratifying, oh my gosh, I just emptied my entire body and I could float now poop. Like, I mean, just an incredible collection of poop. And people go in there and they look at these toilets. And, I mean, like, and you make the gallery smell
even
like roses.
Even better if you could do ceramic toilet paper in a situation.
Oh, you can, I mean, make a ceramic wall divide.
Or with, like, melting glass to look like urine.
Yeah, I mean, like, you go all out. I mean, but the toilets are found objects, and then everything around the toilet has been created by you, including what's in the toilet itself. You could even do a resin casting of the water. So the water is actually resin with the poop in it. And that way you can sell this whole thing and just be like, here you go. Put this in a bathroom just to fuck with people. So that way you walk in and there's two toilets. And you're like, well, don't use the one that's an art piece.
But I really gotta go.
So people just walk in and like, what?
Then and you even interacting
hook them,
with them.
Yeah. Even hook them both up. And even actually at the gallery, make sure you put one of your pieces in the bathroom. Just to really screw with people. But, no, I mean, I think there's definitely a better way to go about doing something like this. And the fact that you've got a failing grade doesn't mean the school is out to get you. It means you need to work harder and be a better artist.
But isn't she doing a smart job at promoting herself?
Oh, she's doing a great job.
She's on Huffington Post. I mean, how many people go to this website on the daily?
And who would have known about this Miss Plum in the bathroom with the
exactly, yeah.
Before.
So really, if anything, maybe her real thing was not making poop art. Her real thing was getting on Huffington Post.
Yeah, she's the
and
Lady
that is
Gaga
the,
of art.
That is the artist's statement. The artist's statement is how society will pick up the smallest, most obscure story of controversy, take it and run with it, and it'll make it so far as to end up on the world famous Damn Art Majors podcast as a discussion topic.
I think we're making her out to be much smarter than she really is. In studying art, though, do you think that a grading system is helpful in teaching you? Or do you think
that's
do you think that that's something that can't really be applied because it's so individualized and it so depends on who your audience is that how can you make that kind of A through F determination?
Well, I mean, for the foundation stuff, when you're first starting out, it's pretty easy to grade that. Because that is, like, a lot of the times the teachers will straight up come out and say, I don't want to see your style. This isn't a style. This is about technique. This is about craft. This is about getting... So then when it's later on, it does become, okay, what have you taken as far as your craft? And then applied it to a particular style or methodology. And then can you convey that idea in a way that we as the viewer and me as the professor can actually apply a pass-fail? I feel like a lot of art classes, while they do have a scale of A, B, C, I really do think they're pass-fail. Like, it's either going to get an A or going to fail. And you're going to get an A because you did work, you worked really hard to do that work, and it made sense within its own definition. But you're going to fail if you don't do your work, or you make work that, within its own definition, doesn't even make sense. I've been lucky. I've never had to grade artwork, except in, like, you know, high school.
That would be a really interesting experiment as the student getting to grade an assignment, because I think it would, if anything, give students and artists and aspiring artists a chance to reflect on what they value. I think a professor reflects what they value into their own grading systems, could be detrimental to the student and the work that they put in. So I think, there is no correct way to grade art, and for that, a grading system doesn't necessarily make sense. But for me personally, I feel like, you know, you grade art almost in the same way that you would grade a math equation, when it's, did you, you know, try to break it down as much as you can into the simple black and whites, the yes and no's. Did they follow the steps correctly? Did they do it well? Did they execute it? This piece going to fall apart in 6 months?
I don't think you can compare it to math, though, because math is very black and white. Right. You either did it wrong.
Right.
And
I'm not saying your whole grade should be based on that, but a good, like, 50%, while the other 50% takes in, you know, the psychology and the concept. And
I guess the idea of grading art in school comes down to what is the end result that you want for artists now. So I think it's kind of different in this postmodern era, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, painting masters, Michelangelo and Da Vinci, they had kind of set parameters that
they
had
Master
to
Splinter to show them the light.
Yes. Also, they have a commercial with Vanilla Ice singing "Go Ninja, Go Ninja, Go."
Yes, they
and
do.
It's awesome. I had a moment.
I don't have TV. I'm
and he does
up.
The dance. It's
oh,
awesome.
Excellent.
So, irregardless, I think because just from an art historical side,
sure,
that art has changed so much in the 20th century and beyond that it's not so much about technique. I mean, it's that's mm-hmm. still there. But the individual story from the artist plays a bigger role now than I think technique does. So that's why I asked that question. Because you don't have someone looking with a ruler measuring your, you know, lines and shading and everything the way they would have done that before.
I noticed this when I was in school, so this is purely a personal perspective on this. Pretty early on, you know what your professor's like, because you see their work. And in college, your professors generally are active artists, so you get to see their work. They will happily show you what they've done. They'll sometimes be working on their own stuff while at the same time you're working on your stuff. And so they tend to, you can see what kind of work they're going to like. And their, you know, their students are going to be influenced by that, obviously, because they're professors.
You want to
get a good grade. But when a student came forward with work that was, let's say, far cry from what their professors did, I feel like the professor then, knowing that it was a little bit out of their, not realm of expertise, but what they really prefer, the professor focused more on how the student did the work. Like, how hard the student... The professors are in the studio. Or at least, my professors were in the studio constantly working alongside of us or keeping an eye on us, making sure we weren't chopping fingers off. Needless to say, I still got away with chopping fingers off. but, you know, and so they looked at that. If the student was in there every day, you know, for the 3 weeks they had to work on a project, constantly working on it, you know, turned around and made this piece, and maybe that piece didn't quite connect with people. It was very personal, and it just it didn't quite come together, and that sometimes happens. The professor would still recognize this student was in here every day,
right,
getting help, working on this, trying to perfect it, trying to make it work, and it just didn't quite work for them. They're going to give them a good grade on that piece because they see the effort. But then you have the student who maybe is never there. You know, they show up for the 20-minute class. They don't actually do any work in the studio. They disappear. They show up for the critique, and they sit there, and they kind of have something thrown together, and they make up some BS thing for it, and they just kind of go, yeah, and, you know, this kind of... And the professor sits and goes, yeah, that's great. Awesome. Excellent. And they can sit there and answer all these questions about it.
It strikes a chord with the professor.
But then the professor sits there and goes, I didn't see you working on this at all. I don't know what the hell you're doing here. Like, and it's going to reflect in their grade.
Right.
And it, I mean, I think a lot of... I think something that comes into play really heavily with studio art is the work time.
Mm-hmm.
And the interaction of the students and the professors. And I think... And that is something I think that dates back throughout the... I mean, granted, before it was the apprentice and the master system. Now it's the student and the professor system. But I think that is something that's very important, that sort of exchange that happens outside of the classroom as far as working together in the studio. And that, I think, reflects very much so on the grade. And if that doesn't happen, like maybe this Anne Plum was one of those, never really showed up, never really participated, and then suddenly the last day shows up with a bunch of crap.
Literally.
Well, needless to say, this article really left a lot to the imagination and, you know, not
too much.
Well, I mean, and like we stated, the Huffington Post pulled this article from another source, and I feel like by the time it hits this third source, damn art majors, there has been so much removed from what this girl was thinking, what her attitude was in the class, in the process, that it's hard for us to gauge whether or not this was, you know, her intent and her best attempt at recreating shock art, modern art, postmodern art, and how much of it, you know, we just don't know. So I kind of almost think that because the article itself was so top surface,
vague,
vague that, like, you'd almost be like, why would you even run this article? You know, get all of the facts in. You know, there's, as I read it, I don't believe there was any real quote from the artist themselves. So how could we possibly begin to assume that this was a brilliant strategy or the work of a pissy slacker? We don't know. So to me, I say Huffington Post, know your shit before you post it.
They had the thing about the laser show featuring Obama and a banana on his birthday. Oh, at the American embassy in Moscow, some artists created a very rudimentary laser show featuring the floating head of Barack Obama with a party hat on for his birthday and a banana entering his mouth in a very sexual fashion. Also, you know, the kind of the racial reference, the racist reference. And I think it said, like,
I didn't even make that connection.
Happy birthday.
It sounds like Josephine Baker almost.
Oh, I didn't have to make the connection because, like, this on this art website, it, like, while this story about the poop on a plate was like three paragraphs, this story about the Russian artists and their basically absolute racist distaste towards Obama was like this huge, long, you know, story.
Which is interesting because in Russia there's so much censorship for artists that it's obvious that they're choosing to put that information out.
Oh, yeah.
It's not like artists have free rein there to do what they want.
And what was... But I just thought it was interesting. This laser show was displayed on the side of the American embassy. And, I mean, it's huge. I mean,
right.
There's pictures of this thing. I think there's a YouTube video somewhere where you can see this thing happening. And they also put up a poster at some point where Obama's features have been distorted in a caricature way. And, you know, the see no evil, hear no evil, speak no evil thing. Only the words have been twisted and it's like,
No sanctions.
I can't remember what it is, but anyway.
Give no sanctions. Yeah,
but it's...
no birth certificate.
It's sort of, yeah. I mean, it's, you know, it's very interesting Russian perspective political art in a very public forum. But I found that article on this ArtNet. So it's an interesting website, this art whatever that Huffington Post took this article about poop on a plate from. But that's just one of the fun things about the internet. You can just keep clicking and find cool things.
Speaking of cool things, Huffington Post did have another gem up for grabs.
This one's so crazy.
This one's silly and kind of adorable and I guess some would say controversial.
Well, so, okay. There are tortoises with iPads for this exhibit on the roof of the Aspen Art Museum. Is that where it is?
Yes, Aspen. Okay.
And it's an exhibit about ghost towns in the area.
Mm-hmm.
But they have tortoises with iPads glued to their backs wandering around on the roof.
That sounds pretty awesome.
But can I just ask, what the hell does a tortoise have to do with a, like, cowboy ghost town? What is the connection? Or is that just, well, they said, oh, we found these tortoises. You know what would be awesome?
No, it was what's the only animal that will let us glue an iPod to it and not complain about it?
I think that's right. I think you're onto something. I also think that if they had put the iPad on a pedestal, people would just walk by it and not even pay it any mind.
But you can't even see it because they're wandering around. Plus, they're not at eye level. And like, yeah. They might be at the wrong angle. Plus, iPads are terrible in the sun, which is where it is. It's not inside. It's
outside. And then you know they've got signs that say, do not approach the tortoise.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do not touch the tortoise. And so you're sitting there like, I want to see what's on the iPod.
So this was
we all know that glass screen doesn't do well outside.
This was an exhibit from the Aspen Art Museum that teamed up with a Colorado art museum. The Chinese-born artist, I'm going to butcher this, Chai Gua Qing, called the piece Moving Ghost Town. You guys can read the name. If you can pronounce it better than me, go for it. There is controversy.
Is that last name be like Kwong?
Kwong. Yeah. There's controversy about whether or not this is animal abuse. They did say that the adhesive they used is in line with adhesives that are animal friendly. They use them within the museum for the zoo for the displays and whatnot. Everything is up to animal code. They are met daily with a veterinarian who checks out their vitals and all that stuff. Everything is, you know, from a human point of view, as humane as possible. The only things these tortoises may suffer from is embarrassment.
Anxiety from all the people staring at them.
I mean, like, because I'm trying to think, like, the whole point of a tortoise's shell is to protect it.
Right.
I am pretty sure, granted, I do not know the mindset of a turtle. Despite,
if you see Michael Bay's latest film,
despite the documentaries I've seen about the turtles living in New York City,
eating pizza,
other than my knowledge that turtles love pizza and skateboarding in the sewer system,
and they hang out with rats,
and their love for mid-90s rap hip hop, I know very little, and I'm pretty sure a tortoise would not care about, like, the person mentions that an iPod is 2 pounds. I don't think an iPod's actually 2 pounds, but maybe the stand, iPod.
And there's two of them, too.
There's two iPods.
They're at an angle.
But I really don't see the turtle caring. I've seen turtles walking around with, like, other animals on their backs.
Yeah.
Like, in the wild, there are pictures, like, National Geographic pictures of a tortoise walking around, and there's a monkey on its back. That's a thing. That's on the internet. I mean, turtles don't care. They're like, as long as it's not eating me, I really don't care what's going on above me.
I guess, like, I would find it more interesting for the turtle to have a camera on its back and show the ghost town of the art museum and make reference of how people aren't interested in culture and how our culture is a ghost town. I mean, like, that would be a more interesting connection. That, I mean, I don't understand the iPads.
The only thing that I've deduced and this could be just projecting, is, you know, we use the tortoise or the turtle as a symbol of slow, as a stubborn, old, just, you know, crotchety animal. And then we just hooked up iPads on it. So it's kind of a play on technology and progressiveness and moving forward, while something like the tortoise is holding it back. And it's controlling the technology because it's an old man, and, you know, all these... Here we go. All these technology companies have, you know, shareholders and old dudes in business suits, you know, running the show. So it's kind of like, to me, it's a take on, you know, how technology is still ultimately controlled by very old, stubborn individuals.
Yeah, I just don't see what that from that? I mean, I could see that, but I don't see the connection with what the purpose of the exhibit is about.
Yeah, because it's displaying ghost towns on the back of the turtle.
Yeah.
From what I understand. Mm-hmm. And my problem is, like, the reason ghost towns happen is because we move too quickly.
Right.
We move into an area, we're like, something's going to happen here. We build a town, and then suddenly that, what we thought was going to happen, didn't happen, so we move on. We just leave everything we built, we move on to something else,
right,
and bam, we have a ghost town.
Which is a metaphor for technology.
Which is how quickly things move. So then, what do? We go and throw this stuff on the back of a turtle that... And where are these turtles from? These turtles...
They're like Africa.
Yeah, they're like, these turtles aren't even... Like, we don't have tortoises here.
The African sulcata.
Yeah, I mean, this is not an American tortoise.
Well, it's not an American artist either.
And so it's sort of an odd mishmash of things happening here. We have an American company that is producing products in China that are mass produced, being strapped to the back of an African turtle being developed by a Chinese artist?
Yeah, maybe
Chinese
it's
artist.
A global economy.
So it really is. I mean, it's a very global thing you've got going on here, but it's very unusual. And I'm almost 100% sure I don't get any of it.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's like, did he pick this particular tortoise for some kind of symbolic reason? Like,
I think it was the right size.
Yeah. To fit two iPads.
Or it could
He's like, I need a tortoise that's somewhere between
maybe
iPad size.
It could be the only animal
If I have to get a mini, I don't think that people will see that.
Well, it could be the only animal that they can glue 2 extra pounds to and it not mine.
It would be totally cooler if he had, like, kangaroos or something,
yeah,
like,
oh, yeah,
carrying around.
Well, a kangaroo with a backpack and the chest plate and it's got, like, the...
And the baby comes out and touches it.
I bet you know more about technology
than
that. You know what he wanted? He wanted probably this giant Galapagos tortoises.
Yeah.
The problem is they're endangered and you can't take them off the Galapagos Islands. But those things would be huge.
You could fit 8 iPods.
You could put, you know, 30 iPods all the way around, you know, full surround, everything. And the nice thing is it'd be about waist height because those things are huge, you know, massive, so you wouldn't have to bend over. But instead, he gets these tiny little tortoises you got to sit there and bend all the way down to.
And you can't even control. I think the thing is, like, they're in an enclosure. So you can't even, like, say, oh, I don't want to hear about this ghost town. I'm going to fast forward through it.
Yeah. I mean, you can't fast forward. You have. And then the worst part is, what if the turtle is, like, facing you? So the iPod, all you see is a triangle of iPods. You can't actually see the screen. The turtle's looking right at you, and you're just like, dude, turn to the side. Like, seriously, right or left. Pick a direction, either way.
Again, I feel like this is an attempt on the part of the artist / the museum to get more attention for their exhibit. Because I have a college degree and everything, but I don't quite get the connection. I mean, I think you could come up with things, but... It's not obvious, and most people need some kind of push in the right direction to understand what's going on, I think.
Humans are great at bullshitting, and we're even better at bullshitting if money's involved.
Yeah,
and there's one
podcast.
Thing. There's one thing. There's one thing I have learned is museums are the best bullshitters. They will bullshit all day long so they can make more money. Because for them, it really is. It's about getting people through the doors, selling the tickets, coming to see the museum, getting the press out there, and if that requires some ridiculous
thing.
Well,
it's like museums in New York right now aren't even presenting artists. They're presenting fashion designers or cars or the history of technology when they're saying, you know, it's an artistic direction. You know, Alexander McQueen is an artist because he creates couture art, so therefore we can make an entire exhibit, which is the most popular exhibit ever at the MoMA. And it's just like, I think that there's, like I said, I think it would be more interesting to make the connection between a museum and a ghost town and talk about culture and how we're moving away from people being interested about art and culture versus calling everything art. You know, like people can go on Pinterest and make their own art displays for their house. I mean, I think that is a more interesting conversation to be having surrounding a museum than just showing up and there are turtles there.
Tortoises.
Sorry, that's deep. Oh, sorry.
Come on tortoises. Now. Come on.
What
now.
Is the difference between a turtle and a tortoise?
I believe a turtle can go inside of its shell and a tortoise cannot.
I also think...
I just totally pulled that out of my ass and I have no idea if that's accurate.
Sea...
Not
water,
sea.
Or
no,
water?
No, water
one
in the,
one
general,
is amphibious?
And the other... Well, I think they're both... technically reptiles.
Well, no. Yes, they're all reptiles.
But like,
yes,
one
is
on
water.
And one can do both water
yeah.
and...
Yeah. Because, I mean, like, a box turtle, but then you have, like, these desert tortoises.
Yeah.
And you see the Galapagos tortoise. You don't see him swimming. You just see him meandering along.
So maybe they have, like, flappy fins versus...
So if you know, if you're a listener out there, we're not going to do any research before we post this thing.
Just like Michael Bay.
Just like Michael Bay. If you could be so kind as to write on our Facebook page... What is the difference between a turtle and a tortoise?
Also, the musical interest, or the musical intro for this should be "Go Ninja, Go Ninja, Go."
Do you realize
we don't have the rights to do that?
How much money we'd have to spend to do that?
Like
probably
a whole
lot because he doesn't get money doing anything else.
Right?
Well, actually, no. He builds houses now.
Yeah, he's Amish or whatever.
Yeah,
now, right.
Yeah.
No, he has a like home improvement show.
Well, whatever.
Yeah, with the Amish people.
Is it with Amish people? That's only because they're so hot right now.
No, I think he went and spent a bunch of time with the Amish learning their techniques and everything.
Gotcha. It has something to do with the Amish.
Speaking of other...
cultures.
Us stretching out into other variations of art and us still calling this an art show. movie posters.
Movie posters.
And reptiles.
And reptiles.
And reptiles. Or maybe they're poultry. Who knows?
No, we're pretty sure they're reptiles.
That was a very interesting segue, but...
the worst one yet.
Yeah, probably. I stumbled upon a couple articles this week. IGN, which I tend to spend some time on, had announced that Titan Books will soon release The Art of John Alvin, a new art book compiling the works of legendary movie poster artist John Alvin. Other movie posters like Drew Struzan, stuff like that, people like that, they create kind of the feel, the sense, the sellability of a movie through a singular image. Back in the day, this was done using a lot of traditional techniques with airbrushing, with painting, with illustrating highly conceptual pieces. Today, it's kind of what technique did you pick up on Photoshop today? But I definitely recommend you guys check out these books. Art books about, you know, concept artists and things like that. You can kind of see the same images that you've seen a million times in a whole different light when you look at other people's concept art. So let's just kind of go down the list here. There's, you know, some new pictures of hypothetical posters that would have been posters for Blade Runner.
Well, he did the original Blade Runner.
Right.
Well, he did the one that was actually used in theaters. I mean, it's another variation.
He did
variation.
A ton of very big money movies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and I mean, Disney,
like,
too. Like,
oh,
not
yeah.
just
he's,
Spielberg.
Well, John Alvin really was the Disney guy.
Yeah.
He was the Beauty and the Beast, The Little Mermaid, Aladdin.
Was he the one who put the
too.
Dick in Little Mermaid poster?
That's not real.
That's totally real. I had the VHS.
Dude, that's VHS cover art. That's not movie poster.
I'm just saying. That
dude, that's a
there.
Whole other guy. That's like
that
a,
dick is there. Lost Boys here.
Well, actually, what's
Star
funny
Trek.
Is like, you know, based. I mean, from this, I went and then picked up. I actually picked out my favorites. You've got John Alvin, and then Bob Peak, who he did Apocalypse Now, which I think is an incredible one.
And the helmet poster.
The what?
The helmet poster?
No, he did... That's... You're thinking of Full Metal Jacket.
Yep, you're right.
Apocalypse Now features... It's very black and red, and it features...
Willem Dafoe. Isn't that the one where he's like this?
No, no. Now you're thinking Platoon.
No, Platoon's the one with Martin Sheen.
Yeah.
Apocalypse Now is kind of similar.
No, Platoon is... Apocalypse Now has... What's the actor? He played the Godfather.
Marlon Brando. Okay, Marlon so Brando. I get those confused.
Marlon Brando in the Apocalypse, skyline.
And it builds into the jungle and it has the steamboat.
It's a rip off of Conrad's Heart of Darkness.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then Bob Peake also did Every Which Way But Lose, which is, I think one of my favorite movie posters, because it features Clint Eastwood with an orangutan, which also is a movie and he's got an orangutan. Also Tom Jung, who did Empire Strikes Back and The Man Who Would Be King. Mm-hmm. And actually, I think my favorite, and Drew Struzan, who's probably one of the most famous.
Sure.
Because of his work, Hellboy most recently, Big Trouble with Little China, and then Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade are some of the more big ones.
And listeners can correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe Drew Struzan did Mallrats too. Kevin Smith's sophomore movie.
He might have.
I believe so.
Not sure. Anyway.
Probably not one of his more crowning achievements. I'm just throwing it out there.
But one thing the four guys that I've picked out here. The one thing I love about these guys is they work very traditionally.
Mm-hmm.
They're the hand-drawn. They start out as, they illustrate everything, hand-draw it. And actually on this link that we're going to post for the John Alvin piece, you can see his Batman... The third Batman
Forever.
Thank you.
Yes. The Val Kilmer one.
Yes.
The Jim Carrey one.
The Tommy Lee Jones.
The Tommy Lee Jones and Jim Carrey movie.
Yeah. And Drew Barrymore and Nicole Kidman.
And some asshole named Chris O'Donnell, who was 30 years too old for that role.
Anyway. it shows one of his pencils, which I really enjoy the
process,
illustrators.
The concept.
Who start out with a pencil and then go, like, I know Drew Struzan, he does airbrush. I think it's his final thing for his, a lot of his stuff is he finishes off with an airbrush. I'm not sure how John... I mean, nowadays, I'm sure they all pencil everything and then use the computer to finish everything up. Same way comic book pinup guys work and everyone, but... That's a good idea, checking in all these beers we're drinking. I completely forgot about my Pokemon app for beer.
Yeah, to kind of throw it back and remind you guys, both Dutters and I are on the Untappd app. And,
are you on
the Untappd app? We got three new beers to check in.
So I just recently figured out how Instagram works because I'm old. So I don't know how phones work.
I'm the youngest person here and I don't have Instagram.
Yeah, no, my cousins who are younger than I
just got a new badge.
Had to explain to me how Instagram worked because I was very confused.
You just take pictures of things.
Yeah, but I don't understand why people would even care about what I'm taking pictures of.
We actually discussed this in episode one.
Then people care.
Wait. Wasn't this episode one?
This was episode one.
This was episode one of Damn Art Majors. We discussed Instagram.
Well, you guys talked about how you can use it to promote stuff, but sure. I don't promote anything. I mean,
you're promoting what you're eating.
I could promote, like, my banana ice cream that I'll be making this
evening. Which, by the way, it's amazing.
It's really good.
But that's
how she got a spot on Damn Art Majors.
What you can do is
I plied them with food.
Yeah, no, you take pictures of the food you're making.
Yeah, but like then you have to stylize it and it just...
No. You just #unfiltered. Because that's what people do now.
That's a totally hashtag, unfiltered.
I see it all the time. And people make reference to it. It's when you take a picture that has no filter on it. And it's square.
Like Instagram. Yeah, I usually just look on there to see what my niece is doing.
Are you a spying aunt?
Well, my sister lives across the country, so I don't ever get to see her real life. So I just watch her.
She lives in the land of hippies. She lives in California?
No, she lives in Las Vegas, the land of booze. She sells alcohol for a living.
Yeah.
I should bring more things here.
You know, it's funny, on the outline here, this is a horrible segue. We do have Grill Meredith, and to learn about Meredith...
Okay.
Do you find it difficult to balance your personal life?
Whoa, you're just going to go right into it, aren't you? Whoa. Hey now, man. You need to kind of warm up a lady a little bit before you just go pounding her with questions. Come on now.
That was
Be a gentleman.
That's a terrible innuendo.
Oh, no, that wasn't an innuendo. No, that's just, it's called manners, asshole.
All right, interview me. I'm ready.
You ready for this?
Yeah.
Ready for the Grill Meredith section?
Yes. I was slightly worried that you all would come up with terrible questions, and I was trying to.
Oh no, I have terrible questions.
But I have no filter.
If you could own any piece of art, which one?
That's really hard. So right. would it have to be a famous piece of art?
No, any piece.
So my favorite artist of all time
Adam Buccafusco, featured at the Zabel Gallery.
It would
Asheville.
Be that, because I'd want the stickers. No, so my favorite artist of all time is Camille Claudel. She was Rodin's mistress. So she's an impressionist sculptor. Mm-hmm. She has a few pieces that I really love, but one of them is called The Waltz, and it's two people kind of dancing, but they're also swirled up into, we can put a picture up, it's kind of hard to describe, but they're swirled up into a wave. And I think it's really a beautiful piece that kind of talks about the dynamic relationship between men and women. And I think she's kind of a cool artist, though she totally got screwed over by Rodin and she ended up dying in an insane asylum, which just makes her cooler, I think. But I think if I could own anything, one of her pieces would be one of my favorites. But my husband and I are talking about adding original art, more original art to our house. So one of our wedding gifts was a original piece by his boss's wife that's a copy of a painting in a museum in Russia that he really loved, but she kind of changed the colors and everything for us. So we've been talking about adding that to our collection.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Very shout cool. out right there to owning original artwork. Do it. Support your artists.
Yeah, it's fantastic. It is kind of difficult on a state employee salary, and right. we both are state employees, so that does right. limit you.
Artists have the advantage of trading.
Yes. Yeah. Well, that's why we just have decided to make friends with artists. So, yeah, Aaron made the suggestion. He's like, I know where you live. I'd be happy to, like, do a payment plan with y'all if yeah. you really want something. So we do really like a lot of his pieces. But it's hard because my husband doesn't have an art background. So he sees something and he likes it. He can't tell you why he likes it. He doesn't really have any idea. He just was like, that looks good, awesome, let's get that.
Right.
He has a much more traditional palette, I guess, than I do. He grew up with a lot of horseback riders and different things, so he likes landscapes and kind of old
Western
style
Kincaid.
Yeah, no, god, no. Never. But so he kind of likes that, but he also kind of likes Asian art, so finding things that we both like is always a challenge.
So if not art history, what would you have done instead?
Well, I had two majors and a minor. I'm a nerd. So I studied history. I studied post-Reconstruction South. And then I studied religious studies. And I did the kind of ancient Mediterranean basin. So like the Jews and the Greeks and the Persians.
So you really like reading.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What is your favorite book?
The one I really like or the one I tell everybody I really like?
The one you... both.
Well, so I read a lot. I probably read about 40 books a year.
oh, man.
So right now I am rereading the Outlander series, which is a time travel, science fiction, historical
Well,
romance.
You just made my girlfriend very happy.
She liked that
She
series.
Loves Diana
it's Gabaldon. It's Gabaldon, I don't know. So they're doing a show kind of...
I know
of,
all about Jamie.
Yeah.
And Claire.
I'm thinking like the Outlander movie that bombed terribly.
No.
It's
this woman in 1945 who falls through a crack in time, basically, and goes back to the Scottish Highlands in the 1740s.
Story of love.
And it's
is it?
Yeah, but she's kind of like a Spitfire girl and ends up getting... So it's kind of a commentary on
and
feminism.
And Jamie is apparently the most glorious man who ever lived.
Yeah. Well, so I'm reading that right now, and I really like that. But they're long, like Game of Thrones long. So
I was going to say, is this Jamie, like Jamie Lannister?
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because it's like her and George R. R. Martin are friends. Diana Gabaldon and George R. R. Martin are friends. And they're both notoriously slow at writing books. So I try to not get too
she
far
just
ahead.
She put her last one out.
Yeah. So I like those. I really liked All the King's Men when I read it in high school. You know, things that you wouldn't think someone would like. I like biographies of royals and...
That's right, you did mention
yeah,
that.
Yeah, so I like histories. Okay.
If you could write a book, what would it be about? Would it be nonfiction? Would it be fiction? Would
like,
it be...
if I were a good writer, because I'm terrible at it. That's why I didn't go to grad school, because I knew that I'd have to write things, and that sounded terrible.
it's a lot more fun to read.
Yeah, it's a lot more fun to read what other people have
written. See, that's interesting, because I find it the other way around for me.
You don't like reading?
No, it's not that I don't like reading. I do read, and I try to read as much as possible. My problem with reading is I need to multitask.
Yeah.
And reading is the one thing I can't multitask while doing.
I think maybe because I read so much, my inner critic as to how bad I am at writing is so strong that it makes me uncomfortable to write. Because I think, this is awful. And then I don't want to, you know, I don't really like the editing process, which is important to writing. Mm-hmm. So I think that's kind of what holds me back. I have a friend who is a fantastic writer, and I enjoy reading hers and giving, like, reading her pieces. She does fiction, and I enjoy reading her stuff and kind of giving her feedback. But if it's my own, I'm very self-conscious. Speaking in public, I have no problem with, you know, giving speeches, all that stuff. But writing, I think, is so personal that if you give it to somebody, they could totally rip it apart, and it would feel so much worse than anything else. That might be totally... on my own, but yeah, I find that to be frightening, so I didn't really.
So you like everything about words, but putting them on paper. That's
yeah.
very interesting.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have a very, let's say they are a tough love family. Mm-hmm. So if you're not perfect right away, it gets, you get feedback about it. So I think that probably had something to do with it.
Now, do any of your parents write, or...
My mom is very creative, but I think she never really got into it. My dad's a dentist and is probably, like, the least cool person ever. My dad really enjoys reading manuals for things. Like, if you get a camera, he will read the entire manual and then want to tell you all about it. So, they're not technically creative people, but... All right, that was really deep.
Ah, that's fine. you heard the impromptu questions he asked me. I ended up going into my whole life story.
Well, I mean, where we come from is very important to who we are.
We want the listeners to feel like they're part of us.
Are there other questions, or did I just totally, like...
No,
it's
fine.
Do you have anything written?
I am curious.
Here.
Because you mentioned earlier how you're not a huge beer drinker, and you, in many cases, default to the personnel at the beer store.
Yes.
Of your limited experience with beer, what is one of your favorites?
So I really like porter stouts. So I don't have a particular brand. I'm not brand loyal at all. I'll kind of try anything. Hence why I just go to the store and ask them to give me something.
Sure.
I don't really like IPAs. I find them kind of a little bit too bitter for my palate. I studied abroad in Italy, so I have a love of wine. So I usually default to wine versus beer. If we're not drinking hard liquor, then I pick tequila.
Really? Tequila drinker? Ugh, I can't do clear, man.
No, I don't.
I gotta
do
that.
Dark. Añejo.
Oh.
It's a age. So this is the misconception. Sorry, I'm from California originally, and so I have a deep-seated, like...
By the way, I have to thank you for bringing avocados to the East. We discovered them.
They're
over
fantastic.
Here, and they're fantastic.
They're
yes.
so good. I just bought a huge bag of avocados to make guacamole. Because my husband's out of town and I'm going crazy with, like, Mexican food because he doesn't really like it.
What?
He's from Oak Ridge,
North
Carolina.
Dude, he hasn't watched Star Wars. We already have our own opinions of Meredith's
husband. God, I love Mexican food.
How do you not eat a burrito while watching Return of the Jedi? I don't know.
Well, he doesn't.
Dude, anything in a tortilla. You wrap anything in a tortilla, it's amazing.
He will eat burritos, but he doesn't like salsa. Because he doesn't like tomatoes, which I think is crazy. And he doesn't like garlic, so
what?
Which I also think is crazy, because it's my favorite food.
We have got to get
him
on the show.
Yeah. He'd be the most... He'd be the...
The foil?
Yes!
Sorry, yeah. Fencing joke. Yeah, so we do love avocados. So, tequila... So, most people think of tequila, they think of, like, Jose Cuervo that they had in college and then drank way too much of and then started getting sick.
Aristocrat,
so,
sure.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's basically like going, I hate vodka because one time I had Aristocrat, or I hate wine because I had Boone's Farm and it's, like, terrible. I mean, that's not really an example of good... You have varying levels of tequila. Sure. So there are kind of cask-aged tequilas that are very good, kind of like bourbon or... scotch, and they have a much deeper flavor. So I have plenty at my house I can bring for you all to have a taste.
Oh my god,
we can do a tequila episode. I think this needs to happen.
So, but my dad, well, my nerdy dad who reads manuals also collects tequila and rum.
Really?
So he does. He has a nonprofit organization that goes to orphanages in third developing countries. So he goes to Mexico, Haiti. I think they may be going on a trip to the Middle East. I think they were talking about going to Afghanistan. Probably not a good idea now, but so that's what they do. So when he goes and collects all these things. So my husband and I went to go visit him in California a few summers ago. And one night we did a tequila tasting. And my dad, we're drinking out of kind of like rocks glasses, right? That's what this is. Yes? No? Nobody?
Sure.
And
yes.
That's
what this is.
So my dad... gave us like a quarter of an inch of tequila in the bottom of a rock. That's a lot of tequila. So we think, oh, it's not that bad. So we're drinking. We were shit-faced. I mean, like, completely. So, but he has a lot of great tequilas and rums there. So he's kind of passed that on.
So in answer to her question of her favorite beer, tequila.
Tequila
is her favorite beer. Yeah.
Probably the worst beer I've ever tasted. I don't like tequila. It's the best tequila I've ever tasted.
But yeah, I don't think I have a beer that I... will always
but
go
porters
for.
And stouts.
Porters and stouts, and but I also like Belgian kind of whites, so I don't.
Well, for porters and stouts, I recommend Black Boss. It is a Polish stout porter. Anyway, can't remember exactly which one it is, but Black Boss, good one.
Well, as we're kind of wrapping this up, that was a nice little take. Let's see what happens when
Speaking of beer, decide which beer
is the winner of
We've all voted, I believe.
The first ever Whatcha Drinking contest. Hold on, and we will calculate out and have your winner. All right, so we're back. We've gone ahead and tallied up the votes here. And we have a first place, second place, and third place. But ultimately, the sticker package goes to the first place winner. So,
because we believe there are no prizes for second and third. You need to earn.
You know what? They get a shout out.
But that's it. I'm sorry. I am not about this. Everyone gets a trophy. Only the winner gets a trophy. Okay. America.
Well, do you want to know the results?
I do. I want to know the results.
So, in third place, out of a score of 18 out of 30, we got Bitter American.
And most of those points came from you.
Yeah, actually, that one was probably my favorite of them. So, second place, 20.5 out of 30. We have 1554.
New Belgium.
And number one and first place goes to Isaac from Facebook with Founders at a whopping 23 out of 30.
And... Isaac will be reaching out to you with some contact information, and we will be sending you your very own prize package, the first one ever issued by Damn Art Majors. Congratulations! Give yourself a pat on the back, spin around, jump up and down, drink a beer.
And if you've submitted other beers to us and you didn't hear your beer called out on this particular episode, do not fret. It may be in the next episode.
Not maybe, it will be!
As best as we can try, if we can find it. Some people submitted some really obscure beers.
I will hunt them down.
We'll go on eBay and try to find them, because that's how much we care about you guys, the listeners. So join us when...
We're not getting beer off eBay.
I'm pretty sure that North Carolina would frown on that.
What? Why?
Because it's alcohol laws. They don't let you send stuff here.
That's ridiculous.
But you could get a friend in another.
We'll
go to the bottle shop. We'll figure it out. Anyway, hope you guys enjoyed What You Drink in the contest.
Part one.
Next week, hopefully.
Part one of many. Dude, I'm telling you, we're going to turn this into a bracketed system. I'm going to get so many write-ins on beer. This show is going to become I'm going to have to do like a segue show. Like, damn beer.
Damn beer.
Damn beer. I was thinking y'all should do a best of the worst segues.
Oh, that'd be a really good episode.
Just a cut of all of our segues into terrible, terrible, terrible segues. God,
the next
time
segue
travel
will be better.
Because time travel's a bitch.
We're mixing sign-offs.
Ready for this? Even worse segue.
Have a good
week,
everybody.
Segue into the end of the show.
We'll see you hopefully next week.
The next one will be better.
The end.